started buying Bitcoin back in 2019 once I realized that the US government was going to print money forever.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Halving Report. I am your host, Brad Mines. Today, we welcome Sean Harris to the show. Thanks for doing this tonight, Sean.
Thank you, Brad. I'm excited. And the Halving Report is a sweet name for a podcast. So kudos.
Yeah, man. I appreciate you saying that. I put a lot of thought into it, and that's what I went with. Yeah. So this is for a little context. This is our first time talking. I heard you're the guy to talk to about the halving party going down in El Salvador. But before we do that, I was wondering if you mind just giving us a little bit of introduction to yourself and how you got into Bitcoin.
Yeah, definitely. My name is Sean Harris. I'm a former professional basketball player overseas. And currently I'm living back in California. I'm from California. So I'm back home now, working out here. And I just went down the Bitcoin rabbit hole back in 2017 to 2019 was when that kind of all went down. I started buying Bitcoin back in 2019 once I realized that the U.S. government was going to print money forever and that there was going to be no stop to printing of the fiat. So and I knew enough about Bitcoin that you couldn't make more of it. You couldn't print any more of it, and that there's a 21 million cap. And that's kind of when, boom, it all kind of clicked. And then once I started buying Bitcoin, then I really went even further down the rabbit hole of how to secure it, understanding a little bit more of the technical side because I'm a basketball player. So I don't have the technical experience. I got the technical experience of a boomer. And but I've learned along the way. And so it's been really good for me. My knowledge only continues to grow. So, I don't know if anyone's an expert out there on Bitcoin. We're all learning. It's very new. And so it's really exciting to be able to be a part of it right now.
Yeah, totally agree with you. And I definitely draw some similarities between you. I'm getting more technical as I go along with this stuff. And, it's just great that it teaches a lot of people how to become more technical and how to embrace this space. But I did play basketball. Basketball was my favorite sport growing up. I still like to jump in and watch Steph Curry hit some three-pointers from the three-point line. So can you tell us a little bit more about your basketball career? Like what position did you play? What kind of player are you like?
Yeah, I'm a power forward. I played at Utah State in the Mountain West, go Aggies. And from then, I just played all over the world. Not all over the world, but I played in South America to start in Colombia and then made my way to Europe and played in about four countries in Europe. So just had a lot of fun. It was fun for me. It was great for me to get to experience the world outside of the United States and to be able to speak another language and to use that language every day. So it's been really cool for me to just, and to handle other types of money, right? I've lived in other countries where it's not the dollar, it's the euro, or it's not the euro or the dollar, it's the Colombian peso, so I've been able to use different types of money other than the dollar and see how those, exchange rates work, why an exchange rate would change. And so there's a lot of cool things that I've been able to see and experience. And so a lot of my experience, I think, brought me to Bitcoin. But ultimately, you have to be humble to get to Bitcoin. You can't be prideful. You can't think you know more than anybody else. You can't think you know more than Bitcoin, that you're smarter than Bitcoin, because you're not. And you just have to be humble enough to know that your experiences have led you here. And, a lot of people get prideful on what they've learned and it closes them off to learning new things. And to understand Bitcoin, you have to learn something new. It's just like the internet or like when electricity was discovered. If you want to participate in this new shift, you cannot rely on what got you here to get you there. You have to level up and understand that you don't know as much as what you may thought you used to know. And so that's what's really good about Bitcoin is it keeps you humble And as soon as you get cocky, it'll humble you again. And that's what it's done for me. And that's good. It's good to be humble and to keep learning.
Mm-hmm. And that's why we say stay humble and stack sats, right?
Exactly.
But your travels around the world could certainly help your understanding with Bitcoin and just seeing how different currencies being exposed to that, how they work, how they trade, right? So, but like, how did you come to fall in to be, the guy organizing this, having party down in Bitcoin Beach, El Zante, El Salvador?
Yeah, so we're doing the having party in El Salvador. It's actually not in El Zante. It's going to be in a resort called Royal de Cameron, which is about an hour further away from. It's about an hour away from El Zante. But either way, I'm part of a group called the Meme Factory. We were around in 2020 is kind of when we got formed, and we were out memeing. That's what we were doing on Bitcoin Twitter. When any economist would say something that was not correct, which they still have incorrect opinions, no matter the PhDs that they have, we've learned through the mechanism that anyone can learn through, which is trial and error, that we can learn through experience. And a lot of us, we like to combat their incorrect opinions on Bitcoin, and we like to combat that with truth and with memes. And so that's kind of how we got formed. It was like, hey, we're going to have some fun. We're going to meme these guys, and they're not going to be able to respond to us or beat us because we have memes and there's more of us than there are of them. And so we just started memeing. We would meme each other in our group chats, more than we would meme anybody else, but we would still have fun with it. And we started memeing. And eventually, one of the guys, Pedro, who you actually had on your podcast, he had a meme that needed laser eyes on it. And one of the other guys named Chairforce put laser eyes on his meme. And then Chairforce came up with the idea after that to do a thing called Laser Ray Until 100K, which was we put laser eyes on all of our profile pictures and until 100K. Bitcoin hits $100,000. Not that we're going to sell, but it's just like, hey, let's do something fun and tell 100K, And so we did that in our group, just us. And then it caught fire. And then everyone said, hey, I want laser eyes. And so then we started, boom, giving everybody laser eyes. And then we kind of got a little bit more notorious after that because, everyone has laser eyes nowadays when they signal that they're in Bitcoin. And so it was really fun for us, and we were new, but we were newer. I feel like we feel a lot more experienced now in the Bitcoin world. From then, it was just like in 2020, I was really excited for the halving. And so, and I say this, I've said it multiple times, but what did I do during the halving in 2020? I went on YouTube and I watched Anthony Pompliano crack open a beer, and it was not that fun. And so I was like, this needs to be bigger. It happens once every 4 years. Like, how are we not going to celebrate this? This should be something that should be celebrated. It's something that in my mind, it was obvious it will be celebrated. And we're early enough and we're fortunate enough as the Meme Factory to be the guys that did laser eyes and to throw the halving party. So, no one else was doing it. And I'm not a software developer. And so I always wanted to give something back into Bitcoin. I wanted to build something on top of Bitcoin. And I always felt inadequate because I don't know how to code. And that kind of made me either sad or irked me. It was just like a little bit of both. Like, man, if you can't code, you can't help Bitcoin out. But it's like, yeah, you can. You can help Bitcoin. Like I was, maybe you can't. Like, who can help? Bitcoin doesn't need help in general. But if it did need help, it's like, yeah, we were memeing. Why don't we do a bigger meme and throw a halving party? And so that's kind of how it all came across. And then El Salvador made Bitcoin legal tender. And so then it just made perfect sense. Like, we got to do this in El Salvador. And I've spent some time in Central America. So it made even more sense for me personally because, you know, it's like, let's get back to some of my old roots in Central America. And I love it. And I'm excited. It's just an excuse for me to go back to El Salvador and have some fun. So that's kind of where it all comes from.
Yeah, no, that journey makes total sense to me. And, you know, if I could just touch, you know, note on your laser, that laser ray to 100K was such a great campaign for Bitcoin. And yeah. I think Pedro mentioned that Michael Saylor had laser eyes within like a couple of days of that going around, which is super cool and notable, right? He's often, you know, someone quoted quite often in this space amongst Bitcoiners. And yeah, no, the having party seems like it's going to be a lot of fun. I was, you know, browsing the guest list. There's a whole slew of great people. And like you said, yeah, I have had a couple of your folks on RDBTC. He's part of your gang.
Yeah. RD. He's part of the
gang. RD. Yeah. So I've been following him for a long time, actually. And I had him on the podcast a long time ago, but I've loved his work for a long time.
Yeah.
Too. But yeah, so like maybe we can touch, you know, why and just kind of break it down simply, like why is the Bitcoin halving such a significant event?
Yeah, this is I think this is the biggest thing that I think a lot. And this was one of the reasons, too, why I wanted to do a halving party, was because it seemed to me like the halving was this signal of what Bitcoin represents. And a lot of people don't catch that, you know, if you, and this is the thing that I say to everybody, right? You ask your family, you ask your friends what their opinion is on Bitcoin, and they'll tell you they've heard of Bitcoin now. And whether it's a good opinion or a bad opinion or uninformed opinion, which more often than not, it's an uninformed opinion on Bitcoin. If you go one step further and you ask them, well, what do you think of the halving? Then it's silence. They go, the what? You know, they have no idea what the halving is. And so their opinion on Bitcoin, what they thought Bitcoin was, is nullified, in my opinion. And it has no credibility until you can understand what the halving is. Because to understand what the halving is, if you don't understand Bitcoin, you don't understand the halving. Or sorry, if you don't understand the halving, you don't understand Bitcoin. And so there's so many things to me that make a lot of sense. And obviously, you know, people are going, well, what is the halving, right? If you're going to keep saying this word over and over again, the people who don't know what the halving is, the halving is every 210,000 blocks, which a block comes once every 10 minutes or gets mined every 10 minutes, every 210,000 blocks, which equivalates to about every 4 years, the issuance of Bitcoin and the subsidy of each block gets cut in half. In other words, every 4 years, the amount of Bitcoin that gets mined gets cut in half. And there's only going to be 21 million Bitcoin that are ever mined. We're sitting at over 19 million, between 19 and 20 million Bitcoin that have been mined so far. And so that means that there's about a million Bitcoin, a little bit over a million Bitcoin left to be mined. And every 4 years, that amount gets cut in half, and then in half, and then in half, and in half. And so Bitcoin was released in 2009. In 2012, we had the first halving. There was 50 Bitcoin in each block subsidy. And then in 2012, there was the first halving. So then it went to 25 in 2016. Then it went to 12.5 in 2020, the last halving. Then it went to 6.25 or 6.25. And then now in 2024, in April coming up, it'll get halved again. And the block subsidy will be 3.125 or 3 1/8. So what does all that mean, right? Mm-hmm. What it means is that Bitcoin is not this thing where as demand increases, the amount of Bitcoin also increases. Because if you think about anything else that we've ever had in the world before, if the demand increases, if all of a sudden this jacket was worth $1 million, well, you better believe that every manufacturer in the world would be making this specific jacket, and the demand would increase and the supply would also increase to match that demand. The demand would kind of come down and the price would come down. And so the thing about Bitcoin, it has an inelastic supply, or the supply does not stretch. The supply is inelastic and it's controlled by the halving, because in the first epoch of Bitcoin between 2009 and 2012, there were There were 10.5 million Bitcoin mined. And this is the beautiful thing about the mathematics, is there were 10.5 million Bitcoin mined. And if you add up every subsequent epoch after the first epoch, they will add up to 10.5 million or just under 10.5 million Bitcoin that will be mined afterwards because of the halving. That's mathematically proven. It's just math. And so that's why there's 21 million Bitcoin, because 10.5 plus 10.5 million, 21 million, bam. And so it's what you know, you see guys like Jamie Dimon of JP Morgan saying, well, what if Satoshi comes back in 2140 and presses a button and prints more Bitcoin and says, huh? It's like, he can't. It's controlled by the halving. You know, the halving makes it so you can't have more than 20. We won't even get to 21 million. It's an asymptote. And if you don't know what asymptote means, pause the podcast, Google it, and then look up what it's a line that, or a curve that ever approaches a line, but actually never touches it. And that's what the 21 million limit is bound by the halving. And this is the whole thing about Bitcoiners, is 21 million means everything. And so, you know, it's like death, taxes, and 21 million, because that is the most beautiful thing about Bitcoin, is it is truly a money that has no inflation. And that's what Satoshi figured out was, well, what is, you know, what are one of the reasons other than being peer to peer and you have this trust that you have to rely on? Another thing that he made with Bitcoin was, we're going to have a limit and we won't be controlled by policymakers that can constantly increase the overall broad supply of money, which is what goes on with the dollar, is the broad supply of money is constantly increased. We don't know at what rate. We can't audit the Fed. The Fed has never been audited before since 1913. And so the halving, I know I'm going on a huge rant right now.
I love it.
but the halving, it represents the scarcity in Bitcoin. It represents that there is no other altcoin that means anything at all, because you have Bitcoin and you have the 21 million. So if there were other altcoins, then that would add to the 21 million. You don't need any other altcoins. It also means that when you watch these altcoins, or the altcoin season, which I was accustomed to hearing about in 2017 when I started hearing about Bitcoin, when you hear about the altcoin season, it means that they all pump because of Bitcoin's halving. Because what happens when a halving occurs is half of the issuance gets cut off overnight. And what would happen to the price is the price goes up. And that happens every 4 years. You see the price of Bitcoin go up. And so then what does the halving also tell you? It tells you that Bitcoin is ultimately scarce. It tells you that there's no other altcoin out there, including the dollar. What else does it tell you? It tells you that it's okay that Bitcoin is volatile. And that's what helped me, was when I learned about the 4 year cycles of Bitcoin, that, whoa, it goes up a ton and then it goes down, but it hits a higher high and then it hits a higher low. And any of the volatility in between, I'm okay with, because I know I'm holding it for longer than 4 years. And so then it makes me okay with the volatility. So I go, okay, it's scarce because of the halving. There's no other altcoin because of the halving. The volatility, I'm okay with it, because I know that what's programmed in Bitcoin is volatility, but volatility to the upside, which I want, as especially being young. I'm in my 30s. I want volatility. Maybe if I was in my 80s, I wouldn't want volatility, and maybe I would. But all volatility is for any investor, volatility. If something's too volatile for you, that doesn't mean you get zero of it. That just means you position size and you scale back a bit to get less volatility in your portfolio. So Bitcoin is telling you all these things through the halving, and you know people. And so this is why one other thing that it tells you is, as you learn about the halving, you have to learn about mining, and you have to learn about the difficulty adjustment, which people say, well, you said that it halves, but like, what is the thing that makes it so it happens every 4 years? Like, why doesn't it speed up? Why doesn't the halving speed up? Well, the halving doesn't speed up because of the difficulty adjustment, which is also programmed into Bitcoin, which is basically, as more hash power or more miners are added to Bitcoin, then the difficulty adjustment will increase. So it keeps the block time about every 10 minutes. And as hash power or miners decrease, then the difficulty adjustment also decreases to keep block time about every 10 minutes. So it tells you all these things. It tells you that there's no other altcoin. It tells you that it's scarce. It tells you that volatility is okay. And it tells you a little bit about mining of Bitcoin. So now once you learn what the halving is, now you can have an opinion on what Bitcoin is. And normally when you understand what the halving is, it makes a lot of sense and you start buying Bitcoin. And so that's one of my goals with the halving party is, hey, we know about Bitcoin now. Everyone and their mom knows about Bitcoin. But do we know about the halving? Because if we don't, then we don't really know about Bitcoin yet. So let's educate people a little bit more. Hey, and we're not going to educate them by necessarily explaining the halving like I just explained to you. We're going to educate them by throwing an awesome party and having fun, celebrating this thing called the halving. And then people can go do their own research and they can explore what the halving is because we're celebrating it. And then they go, well, what are they celebrating? And why are all these people coming to El Salvador? And what's going on? And then, hey, now you can learn about the halving and it's okay. And Bitcoin is okay because you're okay with understanding what it really is. Not that it's some speculation, but that it's actually something real with real fundamentals behind it, like the halving.
Definitely. And I think, you know, what you guys are doing there is more of like an awareness campaign, because ultimately you're not going to be able to help people fully understand Bitcoin or the halving, you know, sitting down face to face for, you know, 5 or 10 minutes. It takes longer than that, right? So just, you know, planting that seed there. But, you know, for myself, you know, one thing I like to do with my guests is obviously sponge as much as I can, you know, from people that are more eloquent than I am about Bitcoin. And, you know, a couple things that you just said stood out to me. And the first thing was the supply issuance is inelastic. And that word kind of stood out to me because it's a common critique fear of Bitcoin is the issuance. And could that change? Could Satoshi back come and change that? It's a common misconception that's pushed by people that have more validity than they should, like
Jamie Dimon.
Yeah, like Jamie Dimon. Yeah. And, you know, and others alike too. But the other thing that you mentioned, that it's volatile, another critique that it's volatile. But like you said, how do you describe it? It's volatile to the upside.
Correct. Yes.
Inelastic and volatility to the upside is, you know, two things you said that definitely stood out to me there. My next question is, I want to ask you about what your thoughts on the recent election that had just occurred in El Salvador. I know it's not really a huge surprise that Bukele won, but if you had just had any general thoughts or comments around what's occurred there.
Yeah. Well, first of all, congratulations to Nayib Bukele for winning the re-election. I'm excited about it. And I understand that, you know, as Bitcoiners, not everyone is into politics. I'm not really into politics that much. But what I do recognize is a man who's doing good things in a country that otherwise had been, you know, shut off from the world, that had been written off and had been gang, you know, just been this gang territory. So because I lived in Honduras, which borders El Salvador. I lived in Honduras for 2 years. And so for me to see, and I live in the most dangerous city in the world. And I've seen those type of things, these gang members that are murderers and rapists that they do. And, you know, I haven't seen them personally, but I have seen the effects of what they've done. And I have seen dead bodies in the streets from people murdered by gang members personally. And that affects you, you know? And so I guess all I can say is if I was the president of El Salvador, I would be doing exactly what Nayib Bukele is doing. Or at least I would hope that I was smart enough and savvy enough and strategic enough to do what he was doing and is doing. Because the things that he's done seem like miracles. And, you know, getting the gangs off the streets, making his country safe, making it so his businesses aren't extortioned. And then on top of that, what does he do? Does he make his own token and does he print his own El Salvador dollar? No, he gives his people money that cannot be controlled. He gives them freedom money. He gives them freedom in terms of safety. He gives their businesses freedom and he gives them money that's freedom money. And so all of these things that he's doing, and then he's building these eloquent buildings with great aesthetic And so there's just a lot of cool things in my mind that he's doing that I'm pretty happy about. And I understand that some people may think he's a dictator, or, you know, he's a tyrant, or that his opposition, he throws in jail. You know, I haven't heard any of these things myself, and I've been down to El Salvador twice now. Or that there's no due process. You know, I understand, you know, and people may think that I don't understand. I understand it, and I understand it very well. You know, I'm from the United States, but I've also lived in Latin America before. And if you talk to the people that are in Latin America, you know, to come with your Western ideals about how a country should be governed when the country is going through crisis doesn't make sense. It doesn't add up. You know, extreme times call for extreme measures. And that's what he has to do in his situation, and it works. And so if something's working, let it work. That's just how I look at it. You know, why, if something was broken, you have to fix it. And it was broken. And I think a lot of people are happy. A lot of Salvadorans are happy. And you see the diaspora that has moved out of El Salvador to the United States and other countries moving back. And people are proud to call themselves Salvadoran now. And he's letting the free market work its way through with Bitcoin, with businesses. He's trying to attract good talent. He's making his country safe. You know, I'm all for it. So I think that's where I stand. And I hope that he gets 5 more years like he has, and it's even better. We'll see what he can do in the next 5 years.
Well, it's definitely exciting. I think there was no surprise there with the landslide win. Yeah. Definitely interesting. You know, I totally agree with, you know, extreme times come for, you know, call for extreme measures, right? And, you know, if you got a country just ridden with crime and gang and murders, you know, it's just all around not going to be good.